state legislature on that promise. And we just went from off the record to recording, so maybe people don't want to answer this question anymore, but I'd still be interested to hear people's thoughts about it.
Well, just jump in that any fully funded of the pilot, it seems to me that inures primarily to the big cities and not to all of the others, right? So certainly I could speak for Hartford's experience with unfunded pilots. So I'm not sure that I see that as the panacea. But I do think that anybody willing to take up that third rail of revisiting the tax exemption of those institutions and from the ground up, that's a conversation that's probably overdue. But it certainly is the third rail, no question.
I see Ryan and Steve and Wendy in that order, please.
So, you know, as the town manager in Mansfield, obviously, you know, we're a pretty unique case because we're a small town with the state's flagship, you know, public university located here. And I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, you know, as far as total valuation goes between the town's, you know, taxable property and the tax exempt property in Yukon, but it's somewhere in the order of, like, I think the tax exempt value of Yukon property is something like 50% more right now than the value of what we're able to tax. So rough approximation, it's like $1.6 billion worth of taxable real property against north of $2 billion. And so obviously, you know, huge implications for us. Not that whatever could be worked out as an alternative couldn't be beneficial, but, you know, our fates and futures are, you know, very, very heavily dependent and impacted by what goes on with Pilot. You know, I don't have everybody else's sort of revenue budget in front of me in terms of their overall, how much state aid they get as a percentage of their overall budget. But if Mansfield's, you know, not tip top as far as Pilot goes, it's got to be up there. And so there would be, I guess, always, you know, a willingness to explore other things, but certainly tremendous, you know, reticence and apprehension about changes and what those changes could mean. When the formula was changed legislatively a few years ago with the new tier system, you know, we've definitely benefited from that, and that's been a huge boom for us. And but we went through a reval this past year, and we're now concerned that because the rate of value increase in the taxable property was something like 10 or 12% more than the rate of increase in Yukon's tax exempt property, you know, any relative increase in Pilot doesn't keep pace. And so essentially, you know, our Pilot funding, we're expecting now to fall as a result of the reval, because our mill rate went, you know, substantially down, like 35%. So definitely huge implications here with, you know, being home to Yukon, and open certainly to being to different possibilities, but certainly very concerned about the devil in those details.
Thanks, Ryan.
Steve, and then Wendy, and then Eric.
I'll go real quick. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Mr. Comptroller, for just bringing this issue up. I'm tremendously impressed and encouraged by you taking the lead on this. And obviously, the MERS reform has helped everyone on this call. And I think you deserve so much credit for doing that. There's third rails everywhere in this discussion, which I think is obviously what makes it so complicated. You know, I would definitely recommend, if you haven't already, reaching out to CCM and their sort of after action on the This Time is Different report, which I think goes back to 2017. So, you know, there's a reason why that sat on the shelf. And I think it would be good to know from Joe DeLong and other, you know, past presidents of their interpretation of why that hasn't moved forward, because I think there's a lot of good recommendations there. Pilot's been mentioned. Unfunded mandates coming from the legislature that are very feel good, but are not felt by the legislature itself, but municipalities, I think, are a big problem. The expansion of the veterans tax credit, which, again, a very noble program, but you have the state legislature voting on it, and then it hits local property taxpayers. And it's, you know, my town council our Hartford City Council, or Hartford's mayor, that are then responsible for responding to questions about why everyone else's tax bill is going up. Same thing with the car tax. My state senator, MD Rahman, who I love, is constantly pushing to repeal the car tax. And we would all love to do that, but where are we going to make up the revenue? And then third, in terms of third rails, which I probably am maybe at odds with some of my colleagues here on the CROG policy board, but I don't think you can separate the property tax problem in Connecticut from the fact that we have 169 municipalities in such a small state without a real regional model of delivering services. And there's a lot of hesitation, and a lot of people love local control, which I get, but I don't think you can divorce the fact that we have towns that, you know, are 2,000-3,000 people that have full staffs working on tax collection and town clerk and things of that nature, which, you know, in other areas of the country would be regionalized, or certain programs would be part of a county level government. So that's just those are my comments and why I think it's so difficult. And there's several third rails to try and jump over. But just want to say I am really appreciative of you trying to take this on, and happy to support the effort in any way possible.
Thank you. Just quickly on those things, I absolutely have talked to Joe DeLong and CCM, and I've read their reports, and I've read some reports that never became public that they have shared with me, and talked to some of the people who were, you know, influential in putting those things together. I probably should have said this at the top, that the ideas in that report are ideas that have been around for a while, right? Instituting a statewide property tax, right? Putting up the sales tax a percentage point and then giving that money to the COGS and they can redistribute. I mean, these are things that have been around for a while. And I'm not saying that they're not good ideas, but I think that there's just no political appetite for them. And I think people look at this problem as so insurmountable that when big, I would say, home run ideas that may be good policy and may make a lot of sense, but they're not politically palatable, people just dismiss those kind of reports. So the one that I'm interested in putting together is almost like, what are the singles that we could hit and get consensus on that could show people that there is another path, and perhaps as a result of that progress, lead into some of the more systemic, bigger term issues. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. You mentioned unfunded mandates. There was a bill passed by the legislature last year that former Representative Jeff Curry spearheaded that basically looked at all of the unfunded mandates when it came to education. And I think it was very important because nobody had really looked at that in a very long time. One of my recommendations will be to do the same thing on the municipal governance side, right? So let's do a review by my office and OPM of every unfunded mandate there, or every mandate that there is out there right now on towns, and then to figure out which of them are unfunded, just to try to bring some spotlight to that, right? Not that I want this power, but another example would be that a sort of somewhat comp of a job to me in Massachusetts is their state auditor. And the state auditor of Massachusetts has the power where a municipality can petition his or her office to basically do a review of a new policy. And then if the comptroller or the auditor in that case decides that it is unfunded, the town can actually get out of that mandate, which would make me very, very unpopular in the state legislature, but I think very a needed position within state government to basically do that kind of review. But to your point, Steve, I think just that if we can show some progress and find some consensus within these discussions and put out some ideas that could actually get some traction in the legislature, I think it could be the starting point to working up towards some of those big ideas that scare people and just sort of make it easy for people to say, property tax is too hard, we can't do that.
So Sean, I think, when Steve was referencing this report is different report, and your comments about the lack of an appetite for some of those reform measures in the legislature. And I understand why that's been the case. But by this point in time, every municipality in Connecticut has gone through property revaluation in the post-COVID real estate area. And I'm going to guess 80 to 90% of us have taken it on the chin in terms of the property tax levy that's been levied on residences as a result of those. And that cycle continues. So I would just be curious as to whether or not the experiences that taxpayers have had locally and local leaders have tried to navigate through it, has resonated up to the legislature enough for them to take a different look at some of those good policy but bad politics ideas.
I personally don't think so. And I can say this as a recovering legislator, that the shell game that we all play, right? I never served in local government, but the shell game that we sometimes play as elected officials of sort of saying, well, that's not me, that's your town, right? And then you sort of say, well, that's not me, that's the state, right? It's a game that we love to play here in Connecticut. And I think it's getting harder and harder to play that game credibly, I think, for those of us, just because people have so much access to information and people are not stupid, that they understand this stuff more than maybe they did 20, 30 years ago. But I don't think that there is a consciousness of, wow, this is getting really bad. And I'm hearing from this from my constituents, because I think it's sometimes easy, especially when you see, as is often the case in Connecticut, when you look at a map, there's a lot more towns that are controlled by one political party than controls the legislature. And sometimes it gets easy for those folks to point fingers at one another. It's easier to do that than to actually solve the problem, in my opinion.
Let's go to Eric, and then Jonathan, and then Matt Hart.
I've still had my hand up. I was next, Jason.
Oh, sorry, I didn't see that, Wendy.
I took it down because you said I was next. So I wanted to be ready. Hi, Sean and Jason and everybody at Krog. I'm going back to one of the original questions. It's a little after the fact now, but talking about pilot and, you know, is there a way to change the exemption? So, you know, Mark started talking about this, but in Simsbury, we have two large private schools taking up a great deal of major town property, along with purchasing homes for their professionals and professors. And we do have one that contributes, you know, a set amount annually, and the other is getting involved kind of contributing to events like donations and things like that, and trying to be more involved. And the point that I just wanted to make was, I don't see asking through the state for something like that to contribute hurting the relationships, because they're part of the community and I feel like they should contribute just like everybody else does. So some sort of scaled approach for these kind of properties to me would be really helpful for us, so we don't have to go kind of grovel and ask them to contribute, because that's something we're talking about. And they are contributing, but it would be nice, since we're losing property homes that we can't have people come and pay property taxes on. So I just wanted to put that out there.
I appreciate that. I mean, I think so much of this is back to what Jay said. Towns being able to control their own destinies, I think, has been a pretty consistent through line for what I've heard from people. And it's a pretty interesting concept that I want to pursue more, you know, whether that's in revenue diversification, right? I've had towns say to me, look, in the summertime here on the shoreline, we have a huge, you know, boom in Airbnbs, right? Those people call the police, they use our roads, they do all these things. Why can't I institute an Airbnb tax if I want to, and my community decides to do that? I've had, you know, towns that have big fairs. I'm not going to name which fair it is, that it's, we're in fair season. Conservative Republicans who said to me, listen, I'm a MAGA guy through and through. I hate taxes, but we should be able to tax the fair in our community, if the concept that I think, you know, we're looking at. But I think back to your point, Wendy, you know, giving you just sort of control of your own destiny and not having to rely on pilot. We've had some good years with pilot in the last few years as the state has stabilized its finances. but I'm old enough to remember what it was like in 2015 and 2016 when we had no money. And my first selectman was calling me and saying, what the heck are you guys doing? You just reduced what we were supposed to be getting for pilot for our community. So for every good time, there is going to be a bad time. And when we start going back on that downslope, you guys are going to be the victims of that, not Hartford.
Eric, Jonathan, and then Matt.
Sure. Director Scanlon, thanks for coming here. This is certainly a important topic that affects us all, and it is a very difficult one. So I represent a town of 3,200 people. I'm a town administrator. We have a full-blown town government that deals with 3,200 people. One of 169 towns in Connecticut. And the reality is we need to consolidate. None of us want to admit it. None of us want to lose our identity. But 169 political entities for a population of a little over 3 million people in the state of Connecticut is not sustainable long term. That's probably the hardest rail, you know, to get over. But consolidation is going to have to happen in some form or another if we're all going to be successful. The second thing is, if you look at most towns, the single biggest expense is education. Certainly in the town of Andover, the money we get from the state of Connecticut is somewhere around 20% of the total cost of education. Somehow, if that could increase with a corresponding increase in income tax, from my perspective, that would make more sense. And here's why, is that ultimately somebody's assets and what they own in real and personal property is not really a good indicator of their ability to pay. And somehow we have to balance people's ability to pay with getting enough money in the door. And for better or for worse, income tax in many ways is a fairer measure for taxation. I know we don't like the concept of the state increasing income tax and giving more of that to towns, but I think if the state increased income tax and gave a greater fraction of that to the education budgets of the municipality, that would go a long way towards alleviating some of the town's problems, you know, and the rest is really going to have to be consolidation and regionalization, because governments are getting far more complex, you know, at the local level, and the staffing levels, you know, and the economies of scale do not favor small towns. And I think that's something we're going to have to tackle. And thanks for sticking your neck out and giving it your best shot.
Yeah, every time one of you mentions an idea, I just think, man, I understand what you're saying, but it'd be tough. Let me ask you though, Eric, when you said the first thing you said about you're a fully, you know, staffed government for a town of 3,200 people, typically in most towns, the education side is the biggest share of employees they have. Is that the case for your community too?
Yes. In terms of budgeting, we run right now, we're running about 66% of our total budget is education. It's been as high as 78% in the last 5 to 6 years. So it's a disproportionate amount of the budget, and it is our biggest, you know, our biggest employment is the schools, not, in fact, just our elementary school has more staff than the town hall and public works combined.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.
Jonathan and then Matt Hart.
The controller, thank you for coming today. I appreciate your thoughtfulness and how you give to these municipal issues. And I feel like it's so genuine. So thank you very much for doing that. Like probably all of you, I've never met anyone who've said, hey, I really like paying municipal property taxes. So it just doesn't happen. But with that being said, there are positives about the municipal property tax that I think should be mentioned. And those positives are from the perspective of the municipality. The first is it's a very stable source of revenue. And the second is it is we're well able to secure debts for people, especially on the real estate side, who don't pay. The motor vehicles are difficult. Personal property can be very difficult, but real estate, which for many of us is the bulk of what we collect, if people don't pay, we're able to collect with interest very well and efficiently through tax sales or foreclosure. I think it would be nice for municipalities to have a supplemental source of revenue, particularly let's talk sales tax. And to echo what was said earlier by Jason Bauza, I would, of course, and I think many of us would be uncomfortable having the state collect that and then give us a share. It'd have to be the COG or direct collection. And the reason for that is, there's always a tough budget year where that maybe gets siphoned off into the general fund as opposed to going to municipalities. I also think the sales tax, just in my opinion, is very much a more under the radar tax. I have no clue what I pay it, or my family pays in sales tax a year from all our purchases. We're real estate, of course, you get a bill and it's very well defined. I'd also say, though, out of all the meta concerns that I have about municipal government and Glastonbury's municipal government, going away from the property tax is not one of them. That's not what keeps me up at night. What gives me agita is what, Steve Stefano talked about earlier. It's the constant barrage of more and more unfunded mandates, which end up putting more pressure on municipalities to collect prior property taxes, which keep going up and up. And again, there's great intent. There's veterans taxes that were mentioned. There's an enhanced agriculture benefits from this past legislative session. But you name it, from police body cameras, which are awesome, to education mandates on the special ed side, all of those things just get piled and piled and piled on top of us. And that's what makes the property tax so painful. And I think we're at a point where regionalism is not the panacea, in my opinion, that everyone thinks it is. If you combine towns, we're not going to significantly, if I combined with Wethersfield, we're not going to be able to lay off, a significant portion of our employees. I'm still going to need probably just as many cops, might be able to consolidate one or two positions here or there, but the number of calls coming into the police department, the number of, crimes being committed are not going to shrink. So I think that it's not a realistic approach to dealing with the property tax solution. Of course, that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to find efficiencies where we can. So I think it's noble that we continue down those paths. We've been doing it for years. Many of the communities that are able to cut deals with each other where we can, where union deals allow, we share services. So, I'm talking right now with Wethersfield about a shared animal shelter. And so I think there are many stories that all of us all over CROG could tell about how we've cut deals in the past to share services. But that's my perspective. I want to thank you very much again for coming out and engaging with us on these issues.
If I can, Jonathan, ask you about what you're talking about, that supplemental revenue. For every mayor, first selectman in these meetings who says, yes, let me tax Airbnbs or let me tax the fair, there's somebody else who stands up and says, quite understandably, look, that just will pit us more against one another, right? And then we'll be competing for having different tax rates in different municipalities. So if somebody is thinking about buying a home and it's a $1 million home and they want to put it on Airbnb, they may do that in one town versus another because of that local tax. So the thinking goes on that approach is that it needs to be uniform across different municipalities and sure, collected by the COG and redistributed. So to you and anybody else, then it becomes a question of, okay, well, what if we did a local uniform sales tax and whatever money was generated in each community gets sent to the COG and then the COG then distributes it back out. Would that be something that people feel like would be helpful versus that more localized, take the handcuffs off and you can basically pass whatever tax rate you want to pass for whatever you want to pass it for? which approach do people tend to like more? And I know that might screw up the order that you have here, but I'm just interested in people weighing in on that.
Well, I mean, I'll just answer that quickly. I think it'd be best for each municipality to be able to make that decision on its own. If the state gave us a menu of options, there may be a community that attracts a lot of people from out of state, for example, and that community may say, hey, we're going to exercise various options because the vast majority of the payers are going to be from, you know, Rhode Island or New York. And so for us, we think that, and those are the ones coming in to use our services, right? Like, let's say it's a community that the population explodes in the summer. So that's just, it's my opinion, provide options.
While we're waiting for anybody else who might want to respond to Sean's inquiry, I would take the opposite tack. And I would say that, and this is exactly your point earlier, Sean, is that, you know, for every one of us, there's another on the other side. I'll reference the collection rate on automobile taxes that was put in. We can either use 85% of MSRP or 90% of MSRP. My town, for better or worse, is sticking with 85%, which puts us in competition with all of the towns that are around us who have gone to 90%. Now, I'm ultimately going to lose revenue in that regard, but the local decision was that that's what they were willing to do. But that puts pressure on Ellington and Enfield and South Windsor and Windsor Locks and Summers and Suffield to say, hey, why are you taxing me more for cars than East Windsor? I don't think that's, I think that competition is not good for the continuity of local governments generally.
Thanks, Jay. I know Matt Hart had his hand up, maybe not in person, but.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller and Anthony, for taking on this very important topic. Really appreciate your time today. I want to echo some of the comments made by Jonathan, Louise, and others. Property tax system, it does have its benefits. It is stable. I know colleagues following the Great Recession, colleagues in other states where their municipalities were relying on sales tax, income tax, their budgets were much more volatile than ours. However, I do think it's critical that the state look to providing a little bit more revenue diversity at the local government level. Because as our colleagues have explained, you know, following a reval and when there's a shift in the property tax burden to one class of property taxpayers, it can become very, very onerous and challenging for them. And we've seen that in recent revaluations almost uniformly for the owners of our more affordable homes, where the value of those homes has increased at a higher percentage than other properties. So I would highly recommend that we look to increase revenue diversity at the local government level. For example, perhaps it could be broadening the base of the sales tax. You don't necessarily need to increase the rate, but could we tax things like legal services, for example, and then potentially use that additional revenue to help fund infrastructure or even to incentivize regionalism, regional services at both the local government and within our pre-K through 12 school systems. You know, that's where the bulk of municipal spending is, right? For state, for towns uniformly across the state. And I would suggest, I know we all hate to do another study, but if we were to retain an entity like the Federal Reserve out of Boston, they do this work, you know, to do a tax incident study, looking at how we fund local government here in our state and coming up with some bona fide recommendations that we could present, your office could present to the governor and the state legislature. And we would be very happy to join you in that effort if you were to decide to take something like that on. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Matt. When I was chair of the Finance Committee in the legislature, we did pass something that would enable the first tax incident study at the statewide level in about 10 years. We hadn't done one since 2014. We did it in 2023, 2024. And I think it was pretty eye-opening for people to see that. And I totally agree that doing that for the municipal tax system would be equally eye-opening. Just a question for you, Matt, on the concept, you're talking about broadening the sales tax. I know that Governor Malloy tried to do that unsuccessfully in maybe 2017, 2018. What about the concept of a statewide property tax where instead of paying, you know, a local rate, you're paying a statewide rate? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you need to assess whether or not how adequate it would be on the revenue generation side, right? Are you suggesting that for the motor vehicle? You're not suggesting that just for the motor vehicle. You're suggesting that for all forms of real estate.
I'm not saying I'm suggesting it, but I'm saying people suggest that.
Hypothetically, the hypothetical, right. You know. Right. Again, I think you'd have to assess the adequacy. And are we talking about a statewide grant list, if you will, or are we still looking at municipal-only grant lists? Or could it be some type of regional grant list? I would start there with that type of analysis. But again, I think that's something an entity like the Federal Reserve could assist with.
Yeah, I think this gets back to the problem that's been referenced a couple of times of, you know, the property tax really is a tax on unrealized gains, right? If you get a new job and a $25,000 salary adjustment as a result of that, you may pay more in taxes, but you have more in income in order to pay that tax, whereas your property value may go up, but you don't have more money in your pocket to pay the taxes as a result of that going up. And that gets back to what Eric, I think, was saying about, can you somehow incorporate, you know, your income in that calculation? I think it's really hard to do it on a local level, but I wonder if you could do that on a statewide level. And then based on your income, you get assessed a local tax rate as well, based on the value of your house. Again, very, very complicated to do it, but that's the idea or the concept behind it.
I do think it would be worth the analysis. Just going to add an additional thought to the discussion here. I wonder if you could combine the notion of revenue diversity with property tax reform. You know, and would that help convince lawmakers and the general public? For example, you know, our northern neighbor, right? They've got a soft property tax cap that can be overridden at the local level. Exploring concepts along those lines, you know, with an additional revenue source. So combining those ideas might be more compelling.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I think that has to be part of it. You know, saying you're in for a property tax cap as a candidate for a statewide office or as a state legislator is a really easy no-brainer for your flyer, until you realize that it's basically just handcuffing the municipalities unless you do the other thing that you're talking about. So I totally agree that you have to combine it, though I'll say that I haven't seen a willingness of too many people that are running for statewide office or are in the legislature to sort of do both those things at the same time. I want to try to do that because I think you need to, but back to, you know, Jay's point about has things changed? I don't know that there has been a big change in that regard.
If I could jump in quickly, hi Matt, good to see you. You mentioned the reval process and kind of the shift in the property tax burden pretty much uniformly across the state, as you know, home values have gone up versus commercial properties. And when our office first started looking into this issue over the summer, we really were focusing on, you know, the impact of the housing boom post pandemic on property values. And I'm just curious, you know, it seems like we're kind of in the eye of the storm at the moment because we're in this 5-year reval schedule that the state of Connecticut has, and we're kind of in the middle of some towns seeing the full impact of home increases, whereas, you know, some towns are still kind of in the middle. So I'm wondering if anyone here has any insight on whether there's any reforms to the reval process that we might be able to make to kind of ease the shock that some taxpayers have seen over the last few years, and whether or not any of your communities have considered, you know, phase-ins or other ways to kind of ease that burden.
I can share an example. You know, there, I have a couple in my community named Bill and Marie O'Brien who bought their home as a starter home in 1962 and never moved out of it. Their property taxes effectively doubled in the last reval, even though we were doing a paper reval and not a physical reval. So there was no consideration for the actual physical structure of their home. It was just looking at comps on a page to assign the value. And relying on a paper reval or market comparables, when you haven't been on the market in 60 years, really, and nor are they going to be on the market, you know, in the rest of their natural lives, doesn't seem like the fairest way of determining what their change in value ought to be. Because if it's market-based and they haven't been on the market in half a century and are not going to be, who really cares what the market says?
Kent. First of all, thank you, Sean, and your team for having this discussion with us. It's so important. Anthony, just to build on your question, a little discussion, we just went through revaluation in Wethersfield, and we studied it very closely, whether to do a phase-in or not. And we looked at a 2, 3, or 4-year phase-in, 4 years being the max. And the numbers dictated our policy, which was the most people were helped by phasing over the longest period of time, which was 4 years. And we were grateful that we had that option. Still, taxpayers got hit really hard, and it's a significant issue in our town. And I don't know if the state can look at different ways to maybe lengthen the time between revaluations, but it's a really big hit to local taxpayers, particularly now as we're seeing the increase in property values. And I think that's only gonna continue to happen. But to answer your question, we just went through it, and a couple months ago, we voted to phase in over 4 years, which was the maximum amount of time to help the most residents.
Can if I can ask, this is another one of those things where it's a divided ball game, right? In some of these forums, people have said that the idea of a state mandate that mandates the spread out is something that they would support, because then it basically, they don't have to make a tough decision of what to do. And conversely, people say, you know, no, that's a terrible idea. Don't tie my hands. Don't make me spread it out. I want to just do the pain right now and get it over with. Any thoughts on that, anybody?
I like having the municipal option. And again, like I said, we studied it really closely. It's pretty complicated, but when you look at the numbers, it became a clear decision for us in Wethersfield.
But I'm saying like the concept of a mandate that says you have to spread it out, does that scare people?
You have winners and losers, you know, on both sides. So it really depends on that particular revaluation cycle. It's an interesting question. And I think it really, it's determined by the specifics of, you know, we have a pretty large industrial tax base here in Manchester, but, you know, Bolton or Andover is going to be a lot different. And honestly, I think a lot of this just highlights the fact that the property tax is inherently regressive. And I think Eric's point, and as you said, Mr. Comptroller, the only way probably to make sure that that First Selectman Bowes's constituents there don't face that increase is to make up the revenue with a more progressive fair system on the income. I really think that's probably the only way to do it, but it's just inherently regressive for people.
I'm not sure if Jonathan Lewis had another point to add, but I know Matt Hart does. So I'll give Jonathan the opportunity and then I'll turn back to Matt.
Matt, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Jonathan. So I just want to add a few things quickly as we close out our discussion. And Anthony, in response to the question you asked, prior to recent revals and the shift we've seen, I think the chronic problem that municipalities have dealt with is that I would say, looking over a 10-year cycle, In the majority of years, a municipality's fixed costs or semi-fixed costs are going to increase at a rate that outpaces grand list growth. And that was the chronic challenge. So in looking again over a 10-year cycle, in many, if not most communities, in most years, you were looking at something of a tax increase. So that always led to systemic problems here. The second point I would want to make differently, and Mr. Comptroll, if you're looking at more singles, doubles, triples, as opposed to home runs, would urge you to look at special ed if you haven't already. Now, that's a major cost driver for many municipal budgets, especially our smaller towns. Maybe there are some opportunities there. You know, I know the school state finance project has some good thoughts in mind. And then my last point is, if you are looking to make a major change, really would strongly encourage the state to do something of an assessment of the impact on the larger system. So that, you know, we don't make a major move and then find out that it has some unanticipated ramifications that we hadn't planned for. And again, that's getting back to the point I made earlier about retaining an entity like the Federal Reserve or something comparable to analyze the larger system. Thank you.
So we've got about 5 minutes to go before we need to bring this special meeting to a close and open up our regular board meeting. Comptroller Scanlon, do you want to have any concluding remarks?
Well, again, under no illusions that we were going to solve this in 54 minutes, right? And you know, it would take a lot of 54 minute sessions for us to even scratch the surface of this, but I'm in for that. You know, again, I know this isn't the most exciting topic and certainly not the political winner that, you know, all of us, you know, see other issues as, but I think it's something we have to do as a state if we want to move the state forward. And I think a lot of the things that hold us back as a state in terms of competitiveness around the country can be tied back to this system if you pull the string back farther enough. And so I'm going to give it a shot. And I don't know where it's going. And everyone tells me I'm crazy, but I'm in for this. And I want to sort of continue this dialogue. So as promised, I put my personal email in the chat. You know, I would love to sort of have anybody, some of you have already done this, and I appreciate that, volunteer to sort of sit on a committee that looks at this a little bit more closely. And when we get to some, maybe some ideas to sort of talk it around, if any of you want to do that, would love to have you. But I just hope that we can continue this conversation, continue the dialogue, because I think that that's the only way we're going to do it. This can't be a top-down mandate from Hartford where they pass some bill that, you know, there was not consensus on from the locals. It just won't work and it won't pass. So I think it has to be sort of a bottom-up kind of approach. And I'm just trying to get as many ideas as I can to put together in some kind of package that I think will move the needle in the right direction. So I thank you for your time. I know you're all very busy and you have other agenda items to discuss, but it's been very helpful to me just to get this feedback for an hour. And I hope we can continue the conversations.
We certainly appreciate having you here, and we appreciate your willingness to take on those hard questions that, quite frankly, it's easier to just let lie. We saw that with your work with MERS. I'm sure we're going to see something similar here. And I'm just going to say, keep up the great work.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So with that, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn the special meeting of the CROG Policy Board, and we'll, in just a moment, we'll open the regular meeting. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Motion made by Ken. Is there a second?
Second, Eric Anderson.
Motion's been made and seconded. All in favor of adjournment of the special meeting, please say aye.
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 Opposed? We're adjourned at 11:57 a.m., and we will convene the regular Policy Board meeting in just a couple